KCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We do thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. We're going to be approaching a topic I don't know that we've ever addressed before on this broadcast, but in that several states which Crosstalk has broadcast outlets are listed in the top 10 states with the most beef cows, I think you'll find this topic very interesting today, and it's not just those states that have the cows. It really is an impact upon all of us here in the United States. You see, the American beef industry has long been a target of the environmentalists and also by the animal rights movement. Our guest today says the goal is not protecting our environment, rather it's a determined drive for global power, and to achieve this desired end, there must be this destruction of private property rights and the elimination of every individual's ability to make personal lifestyle choices, which includes personal diet. We'd like to welcome back here to Crosstalk, Tom DeWeese. Tom is president of American Policy Center. He's one of the nation's leading advocates of individual liberty, private property rights, free enterprise, personal privacy, back-to-basics education, American sovereignty and independence, and protecting our constitutionally guaranteed rights. He's a former newspaper editor. He's the author of Sustainable, The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property and Individuals, and Erase, a political novel. And Tom, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Good to be with you, Jim. Thank you.
So when we talk about this attack on the American beef industry, who are some of the major players? Where's this attack coming from?
Well, the main force behind this is the World Wildlife Fund. And they have created, and they're working with the national beef organizations and so forth, to create the Global Beef Roundtable, Sustainable Beef Roundtable. And the thing is that the World Wildlife Fund is one of the biggest top three environmental groups in the world. They work directly under the United Nations and its United Nations Environmental Program. They work the World Wildlife Fund, it's also called the Worldwide Fund for Nature. They also are working with the World Resources Institute, the International Union of Conservation and Nature. These three organizations pretty much dictate the environmental movements and their policies, what they're going to do, and the Nature Conservancy is one of their lackeys that goes along with them. And the World Wildlife Fund has said that in order to save the Earth, one of the things we have to do is reduce beef consumption. But here they are. They've wormed their way into the cattle industry. And I just found this memo. I didn't even know I had this. But in 2010, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, this is the largest beef association in the country, basically representing all the cattlemen, invited the senior vice president of the World Wildlife Fund to keynote their summer convention back in 2010. And from that day forward, then, this idea of sustainable beef has been moved into the whole industry, and even this is paid for. All the cattlemen have to pay what's called a beef checkoff, and this is how they fund their associations and so forth. And the checkoff now has a World Wildlife Fund panda logo on it. So, as far as they're concerned, the transition is complete.
Well, why would the National Cattlemen's Beef Association partner with somebody who's seeking to do them in?
I asked that very question to some of the experts I've been working with on this, and one of the things they explained to me was that the cattlemen have been absolutely beaten down over years, as we mentioned earlier, not just from the environmental movement, but the animal rights movement. And they just want to do their work. They just want to farm and ranch and do what they do. And they just keep getting pounded on by these people. And they thought, well, okay, so you put this word sustainable in it. We can get along with that. It's a pressure valve, and we can release this pressure and move forward. And it's really sad, because what they don't understand is that the purpose here isn't to protect the environment. That has nothing to do with this. It is about control. And they want to put the beef industry out of business. And let me just give you this one idea here. The World Wildlife Fund, in conjunction with other conservation groups, as I've mentioned, they have their eye on the Northern Great Plains, which spans for more than 180 million acres across five U.S. states, two Canadian provinces, and to conquer the Northern Great Plains, the World Wildlife Fund has assisted another group called the American Prairie Foundations in their acquisition of 31,000 domestic livestock grazing areas in Montana, for example, for wildlife restoration. This is what they do. They systematically move in, and they're trying to cut down on any grazing areas, and they're doing this in partnership with companies like Coca-Cola and Walmart.
Wow.
And Arby's and Costco and McDonald's. These are all companies that have been beaten down by the animal rights people as well. And so they're all pouring their money in here and saying, we can play along with this so that we can, they'll all leave us alone. That's what it's really about.
Greenmail. But Tom, you use a term, as you've written about this, and you call it sustainable certification. What does that mean? Unpack that for us.
What they have laid out, when they talk about sustainable beef, what does that mean? And they've broken it down to three different categories. And it's really interesting, because the three categories are economic sustainability, social sustainability, and environmental sustainability. And that falls absolutely in line with the three E's of Agenda 21. Social equity, economic prosperity, ecological integrity. It's exactly the same pattern. What they're saying here in this, you have to be certified in order to get through the packing companies. The packing companies are the ones that have made the decision on, or they're part of this roundtable. And so in order to buy beef, the cattlemen don't have a market. It's the packing companies that have the market. So in order for the packing companies to buy your beef, then you have to be sustainably certified, that you are raising your beef according to the guidelines that they've put in there. And that's these three points. If you don't do that, you don't have a market.
So you've got the packing companies that are actually becoming the enforcement mechanism here.
Yeah. And there's only really four packing companies in the country. And these are Cargill, Tyson's, there's one called JBS, and there's a fourth one.
Marfig?
No, that's it.
Marfig?
Yes, that's it, yes.
We're going to kind of unpack this here. Because you mentioned these packing companies, Tom, they've already taken control of, what, the pork and poultry industry?
Yes. Yes, they pretty much put all that in place, and now the cattle is the final one that they're really really focusing on.
Okay, well, the natural question many ask is, what's not sustainable about raising beef? And you have presented some 10 reasons why the meat industry does not meet sustainable standards. And if I could, tell us where you got these points from, first of all, and then we'll dissect them.
Yeah, these points that I put in were from one of the green organizations that are pushing this. There's a myriad of names of these groups. They're all the same. But they were saying, here is why beef is not sustainable. And they put these ten things down. And I put down in the article, first of all, what they said, and then I put my comments behind it.
Well, let's talk about that first one you call deforestation. And it seems we've got a lot of pasture land in the U.S. I guess I'm not seeing lots of forest being wiped out. What is the issue of deforestation?
Yeah, they claim that the farm animals require a whole lot more land than crops to produce. This is a major argument that they use, that they can, if they take that same land and use it for raising wheat and soy, then we'd feed a whole lot more people. And interestingly, what they said in this was that that could provide a vegan diet for 6 billion people. And, you know, so the deforestation, you know, the cutting trees down to have fat, you're absolutely right. We're not cutting trees down for it. There's a really bogus report that's out there that you can see, for example, in South America, you can see the rainforest being burned down from space as they're clearing land for more and more of this kind of thing. That's an absolute lie.
Mm-hmm.
What they're actually seeing is every year the sugarcane fields, they need to burn back because the jungle grows back in so heavily, and they're just clearing the same land over and over again. They're not making more and more, but that's what environmentalists will use any lie they can to put their position in place.
So is the land that is used for grazing capable of growing crops for food?
Well, and in many, many cases, the reports are no. A lot of the land that's used for grazing is not capable of growing crops. So, you know, again, as I mentioned earlier about the drive to grab land and take it out of production, this is how they do it. An excuse like this is what they use to get you stop the beef production, and now you've got all this land where they used to be, and they told us this was going to be used for other things, and you find out, well, no, it couldn't be. This is how you will begin to create a worldwide famine when, these kinds of people who know absolutely nothing about the environment are in charge of our food production.
So the second reason you give is fresh water. What is meant by that?
This is a wonderful claim. They claim that the American diet requires 4,200 gallons of water per day.
What?
Now, I know you don't take that many showers.
No.
What they're talking about here is, you know, including in that is animal drinking water, irrigation, and now they said irrigation of crops, and I find that interesting because that's got to be included in what they want to do,
mm-hmm.
And then of course the animals are washed, and you know the processing, all that kind of stuff. I find it interesting, you know, it's a vegan diet. They say a vegan diet requires only 300 gallons per day. And I guess they don't plan to irrigate the land for them, but, well, that's in the 4,200 number. So, I mean, again, their numbers make no sense. They're just trying to shock you.
Yeah, let's find out about this next point, too, waste disposal.
Yeah. The factory farms that house, you know, thousands of animals produce this waste. Now, what's interesting, when you see animal rights people and environmentalists, they'll run these, you know, these very emotional commercials on TV about the suffering of the animals and that sort of thing. Those animals are in these massive animal factories. You've heard the reports where chickens never touch the ground in their lives, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, interestingly enough, these very policies that they're putting in place, which are destroying the small farmer, the small rancher, the small cattle producer who care about the land, know how to take care of the land, have done it for generations, they're helping push it into those factory farms, and they're creating the situation themselves.
We'll be back in just 1 minute. Tom DeWeese is with us today. We're talking about the growing push to destroy the beef industry. And what is the purpose behind all of this? Back in just 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, author and seminar speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, are we making any progress with a creationist view of the unborn?
Yes, it seems we are, Chris, although there's positive and negative steps being taken. More and more people are being educated on the personhood of the unborn child and the need to protect it. Even efforts to clone humans are helping in the sense that there's much scientific evidence now for the unique personhood of the fertilized egg. Unfortunately, this doesn't always carry the day with legislatures and judges, for they often rule that such a person has no individual rights and can be aborted. We yearn for a day when even the courts go back to Genesis for their thinking.
Thank you, Dr. John.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Yes, there is a growing push to destroy the beef industry, and it's all connected to other topics we've discussed in the past. We'll be circling back to that, but Tom DeWeese is with us today. He is president of the American Policy Center, and right now we're discussing the 10 reasons why the meat industry does not meet sustainable standards and what they are pushing for. We've talked about the deforestation, the fresh water, the waste disposal. Tom, point number four they bring up is energy consumption.
Yeah, these are their words. They say for the steak to end up on your plate, the cow has to consume massive amounts of energy along the way as the cattle are transported thousands of miles to be slaughtered, and then they have to, you know, get to the market, and then they have to be refrigerated and all that. So all this energy is used up in the production of it. And then they go on to say, well, let's not forget that the beef must be cooked as well.
Oh my.
So, you know, that's more energy. Well, you know, the transportation argument, this is, you know, transporting the beef thousands of miles, if that has to be done, it's because of their own policies. They have worked to destroy the smaller packing companies, the smaller places where they could do things more locally, and making it, you know, when there's only four available, then you've got to transport to get to those processing places. And this is by their own bad policies that's a problem.
Point number five is food productivity.
They say that food productivity on farmland is falling behind the population. And the only option, besides cutting the population, is to cut back on meat consumption and convert grazing lands to food crops. Well, this goes back to what we were talking about in the earlier one. And, as we pointed out, a lot of that grazing land does not convert to food crops. And so you gain absolutely nothing. What you will lose is your choice in what you care to eat, your personal choices, and you will begin to see massive food shortages. Everything under sustainable development is based on a crisis, some kind of crisis. We've got to do this. We've got to do it now. And you know, the fact is there is no worldwide food shortage. The only places you'll find food shortages in the world that I'm aware of is in totalitarian countries that are doing these very policies, trying to control what people eat, and not in free market areas where people have learned for centuries how to feed the masses and not only feed them and feed them well, but make a profit from it, which means they'll do more.
I'd like to hearken back to the World Wildlife Fund because I've got a document here from their website, Tom. And it says, with the global population expected to exceed 9 billion by 2050 and income levels rising, demand for beef is increasing and will only grow. Yet beef production requires a lot of land, water, and energy and generates considerable waste. It's thus essential to improve its sustainability globally. You know, just in that sentence alone breaks down many of these points of what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, they don't hide it. And this is why it is so frustrating and really tragic that the National Cattlemen's Beef Association has been suckered in to working with these people. I guess that shows you how much pain they're under and so forth, but they've got to understand they are the target. This is not going to get them off their back. This is not going to help their industry. It's not going to improve their product, because what you're seeing, one of the first things that when they brought in this roundtable, one of the first things they did was they eliminated the labeling of country of origin. So now we don't know we have American beef. It could be coming from anywhere. And watch the news, and you will see more reports starting to pop up of tainted beef.
Okay, Tom, I think this is an important point you're making here, and you said they're removing the origin labeling as to country of origin. Why would this be done? Why are they removing that label?
Because they are able to get cheaper beef in other countries. And, for example, Tyson's And now they also do the chicken situation, but they have chicken and cattle in China, and they have it processed there, and then they ship it over here. And we've heard the stories of tainted chicken. And now we're seeing this happen with beef. It's coming from areas that, even though they're touting all this as, well, sustainable beef, that'll make it all an improved product, and everybody's under the same label. Other countries, it's just not true. In America, we have the best products because our people know how to do it right and have been doing it for centuries. And
our standards are high.
Our standards are high, exactly. Yeah.
And so this tainted meat comes in, and you pull off those country of origin labels, which means all of a sudden then it seems these massive recalls have been happening left and right, so that's going to be including the recall of U.S. beef as well as beef from other places.
Sure, and here's the interesting part about that. That works right in the favor of the World Wildlife Fund more than anything else, because now people get a fear of eating beef. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I don't know if we should eat that or not.
Yep.
That's a victory for them. Get you to stop doing it.
Wow.
That's the point.
Wow. Point number six, you have global warming.
My favorite.
Yes.
Yeah, here we go. Global warming is driven, this is what they say, by energy consumption, and cows are energy guzzlers. And then, of course, now we have this whole debate that's been going on since the Green New Deal was introduced about cow flatulence. And this being, one of the main sources of, greenhouse gases. And so they keep pushing that story. And,
Tom, this past March, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, and he had this big event. The school's chancellor was there, Richard Garanza. There was the Brooklyn Bureau President, Eric Adams, and they made this big announcement. New York City schools, public schools, will be having meatless Mondays starting this 2019-2020 school year. They also reported students in 15 schools in Brooklyn had already been part of a pilot program for this to all vegetarian breakfast and lunch menus. But here's what Mayor de Blasio said. He said, quote, "Cutting back on meat a little will improve New Yorkers' health and reduce greenhouse gas emissions." Tom, this is playing right into the hands of the anti-beef industry.
Absolutely. They're all tied together. I mean, this is what, as we've argued all these years about Agenda 21, a comprehensive blueprint to reorganize human society, that's what they said it was. They warned us that's what it was. And they were going to use the excuse of environmental protection to get all of us to voluntarily give up our liberties, because if we don't have a planet to stand on, then it doesn't matter how many rights we think we have. And so all of this falls in place with that propaganda. And this is how you see, when we first started talking about Agenda 21 and trying to warn people about it, and that they were going to herd people off the rural areas into cities and so forth, people would say, oh, come on, how are you going to do that? Well, you make it impossible to live there. That's the way. And this, and what we're discussing here is a step on one industry, what they're doing to completely control that industry, control what the rest of us are allowed to eat, put on our plate, make our own decisions. And and people always say, how does a mess like Venezuela happen? How does it happen like that all of a sudden the economy collapses? It's because what you didn't know during all that time was step by step there were these controls being put on every little aspect of life. There was a rule and a regulation for every single industry, taxes going up, controls of this, controls of that, and eventually it collapses. It hasn't happened in America because we have a strong economy, but it's moving in that direction, and these things being put in place, we're moving towards a period of dark ages of pain and misery unlike anything Americans have ever understood.
I have no idea what this seventh point has to do with American cattle industry. The loss of biodiversity.
They say, what are some of the examples that the Greens give of this? I'm with you. I have no idea what this means. They say loss of biodiversity. They're talking about poaching and black market sales of what they call bush meat, including everything from elephants and chimpanzees to birds.
Oh, my.
But that was in the list when they put it out about why beef isn't sustainable. So
loss of biodiversity. Well, next point is grassland destruction.
They base this on the domesticated animals like cows that replace the bison and the antelope. That this is one of the things they're saying, that the cows are taking over the plains, the grasslands, and we're losing species there, particularly antelope and elk that we're losing there. Those herds are really diminishing. Well, here's the interesting thing here. First of all, one of the when you get into a meeting with environmentalists, they have this reverence for the Native Americans, you know, the Indian populations and so forth of old, because they just lived off the land and just took what they needed. They never made any kind of an impact on the environment. That's the argument that we hear. Well, as I said in the article, if you take a trip to Bozeman, Montana, there's a cliff there, and I now know there are more than one, where the Native Americans used to run entire buffalo herds off the cliff. And you can even see on the opposite side of the cliff where their antlers would hit, or their horns would hit the other side and scrape it. And they would kill the entire herd. Then they'd take what they want. That doesn't fit the narrative that they give about them just living off what they needed. So, you know, that's one of the fallacies. The other thing is that through the Wildlands Project and Dave Foreman's ravings of Earth First, and they brought in the wolves. The wolves that they've brought in for reintroduction into the West are not the ones that were native there. They are from Canada, and they're more aggressive. They have now been brought into the plains, and they are aggressively growing in numbers, and they are decimating the elk and antelope herds, you know, because they have no, they're not allowed to be controlled. Mm-hmm. Ranchers, people aren't allowed to shoot them or anything, and so they're growing like crazy, and there's no control over them.
Soil erosion.
They claim that U.S. pasture land is overgrazed, and that's causing erosion. And, you know, what you have here are cattlemen who have been on their farms or ranches for generations. If they were such lousy stewards of the land as this is trying to say they are, they wouldn't be there. But they are. It is the small cattlemen, the individual families and so forth that have been the majority of this industry, they're the best stewards of the land. They understand.
Yeah.
If they let it go, then they're out of business, mm-hmm. and they know that.
They're the best stewards of their own land.
Exactly.
Yeah. The final point you mentioned, you addressed the issue of lifestyle disease. What's meant by that?
I don't know. Yeah. They're saying lifestyle disease. Here's what they say. They blame it on excessive consumption of meat in combination with environmental pollution and lack of exercise, leading to strokes and cancers and diabetes and heart attacks. In other words, people are too stupid to take care of themselves and eat too much, and somehow that's the cattleman's fault.
Folks, we'll be back in just 60 seconds here. Have some more thoughts from Tom DeWeese on this growing push to destroy the beef industry. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
If you're like most individuals, you look forward to your vacation. Many will take great effort to consider a destination the family will enjoy, what to do, where to stay, and what highways to take to get there. Sadly, most people spend more time planning their one-week vacation than they do preparing for eternity. The Bible says our life is but a vapor. None of us has the promise of tomorrow, and our eternal destiny is sealed at death. Wouldn't it be wise to investigate these things? That's the purpose of the book, Preparing for Eternity. In this book, author Mike Gendron contrasts the truth of God's Word with the teachings and traditions he was taught for over 30 years in the Roman Catholic Church. He found that eternal life is not merited by good works, but is given freely by God's grace to those who put their faith and trust in the Lord Jesus Christ as their all-sufficient Savior. The book, Preparing for Eternity, is available for a donation of $17 or more to VCY America by calling 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Tom DeWeese is our guest today from the American Policy Center, and we're reviewing this growing push to destroy the beef industry. I've got just a few more questions before we open phone lines, but Tom, you've written about this and have published it on your website. How is it our listeners can obtain it?
Our website is americanpolicy.org. And it is the lead article, I hope, on there right now. And it's called the Growing Fight to Destroy the Beef Industry. What is it? Yeah. Growing Drive to Destroy the Beef Industry. Yeah.
And again, folks, the website, AmericanPolicy.org, AmericanPolicy.org. And, Tom, we're going to circle back as we've gone through these 10 points here. I mean, this is really the goal of the Green New Deal. I mean, this is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, to get rid of these cows. This is also the whole purpose, not the whole purpose, but one of the purposes that is being driven through Agenda 21.
Oh, without question. This is part of that. And, you know, the Agenda 21 has gone through several different cycles, as it started out as Agenda 21. And then in 2000, it became the Millennium Project was an upgrade of it, an update of it. And they came up with seven different goals that, you know, put it in place. Well, then 2015, they came up with Agenda 2030, which was exactly the same thing. Only now they took the seven goals and turned them into 18 or whatever. Eight goals and turned into 17. And, you know, now it's the Green New Deal. And that is the most honest of all of them, because they have really told what they intend to do. They've taken off all the cloaking devices that this is just about protecting the environment. And they've said, nope, we're socialists. We're going to turn the whole country, the whole world into socialism.
Yeah.
That's what this is about.
Wow. So are we beyond hope, or can this be countered? What way can people get engaged with this issue? And I'm not just talking about those within the beef industry, because it seems like they're going to need a whole lot of help from just regular consumers across this land.
Well, and this is, I think, the real focus on it. The American people have got to learn, they've got to understand that if they don't take some action here on this, then they're going to lose their ability to choose what they put on their dinner plate. That's a major freedom in life. And these people have decided, the World Wildlife Fund and all their buddies with them have decided, we know better for you. Of course, that's the whole root of socialism. We know better what you need to do to live instead of you making these choices. And what I'm trying to do is call out the American people and tell them, this is what you're facing, and you've got to get outraged by this. Keep in mind, these companies, Cargill, Tyson's, JBS, and what was the fourth one? I never can pronounce it. Marfig, yeah. But they're from Brazil. But anyway, keep in mind, Tyson's food is one of the worst in this, but so is Walmart, and so are these other corporations that are going along. Every time you hear sustainable used in, oh, this is sustainable beef, this is a sustainable product, you are getting ripped off. It is not safer, it is not better, it's more expensive, it's causing shortages, and if you would start going into stores and refusing to buy anything with the word sustainable on it, you would begin to see this disappear. They're doing it out of fear. They have been blackmailed by groups like the World Wildlife Fund into fear, into putting these programs in place, and that's because we sit there silently and say, okay, golly, we've got to fight back, or we're going to lose our opportunity to have any choices in our life whatsoever.
You've indicated that people need to demand that country of origin labels are put back on all beef products. Who do they make that complaint to?
Well, I think to the packers, first of all, to the packing companies. And going to the groceries, primarily are the market. You go into your grocery and pull out a package of beef and say, what country is this from? And, well, I don't know. I'm not buying it until I know. There's too much danger out there. Those are the kind of things you can do. You can start letter writing campaigns, things like that, but something to make the pressure that, yes, I want the country of origin. Of course, you can also write your congressman and demand that they take some action on this. We're so thrilled with our congressman.
Yeah, so we have these four companies, Cargill, Tyson's, JBS, and Marfrig. Can new packing companies be formed?
Well, they have tried in the past to do that. And there was one that they created, and it cost like $50 million to put it together. And as they got it all ready to go, then those four bandits lowered their prices. Of course, how were they able to do that? By controlling the entire market and bringing in foreign beef. And they were able to put them out of business because they couldn't compete at those lower prices.
Wow.
Yeah.
Friends, our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Maybe you are in the Beef Association of in some sort. Maybe you raise beef cattle. Maybe you are a consumer, as I'm guessing many of you are. Your comments, your questions on the issue here today are number 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Now, Tom, you've been with us many times before on issues, and you've warned us about that word sustainable. You've indicated that there's a connection between what you're even talking about today here, this control on the beef industry, and private property rights. Tell us, what is that connection?
Well, first of all, the grazing of the cattle is on private property. And, whether on the range out in the West, where they say, well, it's public lands, well, ranchers have, from 100 and some years ago, they have grazing permits, water permits that are every much as your property as your deed to your property. And this is all a part of rolling back private property, taking the land, and having government control it.
Okay, let's get to the phone lines here. Ron is calling from Washington, and Ron, you're on the air.
Yeah. Yes. I'm a substitute teacher. I was reviewing a standardized test, and it was talking about these invasive species on our public lands, and the invasive species they talked about was beef cattle. Mm-hmm. And it said, encourage the students to write their elected representatives and complain about having beef cattle on Bureau of Land Management land.
Yeah, this is the tactic that they use constantly. And the Bureau of Land Management is a terrorist organization which shouldn't exist, and they're doing absolutely nothing to help the wildlands out there. They are just controlling. This is one of the big pushes of getting people off the rural lands, and this is how they're doing it. And the Bureau of Land Management is one of the worst of it. And the cattle being endangered, invasive species. Where are the cows supposed to go? Are we just going to get rid of them because they don't have a right to live? Is that the point? I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's another whole issue. I mean, look what we're doing with aborted babies here, too, in this land. But
yeah.
It's outrageous. And here we have a teacher saying, yeah, that's part of the writing assignments and the testing requirements for young people. Thank you for the call, Ron. Let's go to Megan, who is calling in from Mexico. Megan, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you, Mr. Deweese. It's always a pleasure to hear what you have to share with us.
Thank you.
Well, depressingly so.
sorry.
thank you for giving us some hope that someone's keeping tabs.
Mm-hmm.
I homeschool my children, and we've been studying the Dust Bowl, and I am just shocked, again, at the lack of historical knowledge in so many people. I just want to read what I read in her dictation today. It's short. It says, farmers in the Midwestern plains plowed the native grasslands to plant wheat. They did not know that grass kept the soil healthy and in place. For 8 years, there was not enough rain. Nothing grew. The dry soil became like powder. Strong winds blew the soil away in massive dust storms, and people had to leave their homes to find hope elsewhere.
Isn't that interesting?
And I'm just thinking of also the elk and the antelope grazing in soybean fields.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that interesting that the very things that started one of the worst environmental disasters, were caused by employing some of the very policies that they're now saying we need to do to improve the earth?
Exactly.
Well, nice.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you.
Let's go to Newport, Tennessee. Erica's calling. Erica, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Okay. So originally I'm from Illinois, and growing up in the Midwest, you deal a lot with farms and soybeans and corn and that sort of thing. And we were always taught, you know, you have to rotate your crops, and not all land is good for developing crops.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I found so crazy listening, that these people just think, oh, here's a patch of grass, let's plant a crop there. That doesn't work. Now I live in Tennessee, and that's definitely, you can't grow corn in Tennessee like you can in Illinois. It's not the same breed of corn. You need a different breed. But now our family has dairy cows here in Tennessee, and we had something similar happen a couple years ago. We almost lost our farm, where they were regulating us and taxing us, and it ended up, we lost our contract with the big dairy, and now anytime we have to sell milk, we have to sell it in bigger batches than we've ever had to produce before, and it's almost to the point where it's impossible to keep up, because we're just a small family farm.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to hit the regulations, they have to turn us into a big corporation, and we don't want to do that. We can't do that and sustain our farm.
Isn't that interesting that, like I said earlier, you see these commercials and pictures and stuff that they run of these horrible big the conditions in these factory farms, and we've got to stop this. But the very policies that they are creating are putting in place are the ones that are creating those factory farms. And people like you that you know, have a small operation and enjoy it and do a good product, and you know, you're the ones being hurt by it.
Yeah,
we used to have the nieces and nephews, or like the local FFAs in the surrounding areas, would come out and they'd do their volunteer hours, and especially the calf pens. Those were always a great entertainment, great learning, being able to watch the births of the cows. We can't have the FFAs come anywhere near the farms anymore because of they call it health regulations.
But oh my!
17, 18-year-old, you know, high school juniors and seniors have no further health risk to our cows than myself or our children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jim, what she has just pointed out is a major piece to this sustainable beef roundtable. Under the social sustainability chapter of what they mean by being certifiable here, it talks about our health, safety, and rights of all workers protected. Are all workers sufficiently competent? These are some of the things they had in the breed of cattle and choice of production system. Is it suited for the local climate, soil, pests, and disease? These are the regulations that they have to meet in order to do their job. Now, do you think a guy's been in the cattle industry and his family's been in it for 100 years, that he now has to think about, you know, golly gee, do I understand how to take care of this, and am I doing this in the right climate for my cattle? This is the idiotic bureaucracy that they put in place to put you out of business, and she's showing exactly how they use it against them.
Erica, thank you so much for your call, and hence we're seeing the destruction of the small family farm, whether it be dairy farms or whether it be that of cattle ranches as well. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, we're just seconds from a break, but we'll pick up some more calls right on the other side. I do want to give out Tom's website, though, where you can download this article on this growing drive to destroy the beef industry. You can go to AmericanPolicy.org, AmericanPolicy.org, and you'll see the points here for yourself. But the beef industry is in the crosshairs here of groups like the World Wildlife Fund and from others as well. Back in just a minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. G. Brock Chisholm, in the 1940s, helped to found the World Federation of Mental Health. What was their goal? In part, to set up traditional values as being the sign of mental illness. In fact, Mr. Chisholm declared, quote, "The people who have been taught to believe whatever they were told by their parents or their teachers are the people who are the menace to the world," end quote. So if you believe in right and wrong, you're mentally ill. He stated this, in fact, in a previous comment. Quote, if the race is to be free from the crippling burden of good and evil, it must be psychiatrists who take the original responsibility, end quote. He also laid out, if you believed in the free market system and private property, and you defended your private property, that was a sign of someone who was neurotic, mentally ill. Sound familiar?
Folks, don't think that Tom DeWeese is making this stuff up. I'm holding in my hands right now a release for the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef that's going to be held in Latin America. Sustainable Beef Vision Summit, July 10, 11, and 12, 2019, Sao Paulo, Brazil, July 10 through 12. It's ironically held at Hamburger University. Support from the Global Agenda for Sustainable Livestock. And then it says, thank you to our premium partners. And, Tom, I'm seeing Cargill. I'm seeing Dawn Meats. I'm seeing the McDonald's logo in this.
Yeah, that's, again, they have been for a couple decades, have been pushing these ideas, this whole sustainable food processing. And I know why, because in the beginning, they were being attacked by these same forces. So, you talk about subjecting and taking control of whole corporations and beating them into submission. This is what they've done, and now they're saying, oh, goody, do I get a plaque for this now?
Wow. Tom, you had some comments about a cattle drive.
Well, in talking with some of the cattlemen and their frustration about how can we stand up to these forces, how can we get people to listen to us because they have so much against them. Now, there is a wonderful organization that's fighting this called RCAF, and that stands for Ranchers Cattlemen Action Legal Fund, and they're doing what they can. They're filing suits and so forth. But I told them my intention was to get the American people to understand this issue. How do you get this message out so that, people will hear what you have to say? And I said, take one day in five different cities and have a cattle drive down Main Street to City Hall or the State Capitol Building, whichever suits you, and have a news conference there. I think you'll have their attention at about that time, and start naming the names, just as we've done here, of these packers and the World Wildlife Fund, people like that behind it, and you can begin to build pressure. If they would do that, if they would have a cattle drive down street of five different cities on the same day, they would get international coverage
Wow.
on it.
Wow. Cheryl, Menominee, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yep, hi. I'm kind of going to just echo what the gal from Tennessee said. We've been a dairy farm for 52 years. My dad started it. And anyway, the Department of Natural Resources came in about 3 years ago and said that we had to spend probably $2 to $3 million to put in a manure holding area, and we were a small family farm. Four of my sons decided to farm with us, and long story short, basically, I told my husband, I said, it's Agenda 21 on the dairy farms too, because basically we couldn't afford it, and we sold our cows last fall, and now we're just struggling to survive on the land we have. And the sad part is we've always believed in, having hay crops and stuff like that, and not just row crops where the soil erodes so bad. And now we're seeing that all around us here, torrential rains and corn and beans cutting gullies, and they talk about, preserving the land, and yet it's defeating the purpose.
It's destroying it, yeah.
And they remove that. So, anyways, long story short, we're just another victim of the in the 21.
Wow.
As far as we see it, so.
Yeah. If you watch the policies that they call environmentally correct and to protect the environment, and here they're taking folks like you and literally running you off the land that you've taken care of, and putting their policies in place, 9 times out of 10, those policies hurt the land more than anything that they're supposedly fixing. And that's the tragedy of it all. And you're just going to have one vast wasteland across this country when all these policies are put in place. and then the cities are going to be teeming, crowded places of starvation and starved on energy as well as food, everything else. This is the utopia of Sustainable Development Agenda 21.
Cheryl, thank you for the call. Next to Hillsboro, Kansas, and we have Amy calling. Amy, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and also thank you for approaching this subject. I work on a ranch, and we also raise cattle at home. And as far as the deforestation would go, I would echo the fact that in Brazil, you know, that they have to redo the where they've cleared the land. We're constantly clearing trees and weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if they're wanting to plant crops, everybody's afraid of GMOs right now, so how are they going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And then I also remember in FFA, when I was in there in the mid to late 90s, they started promoting Agenda 21 with that already, and, you know, that's supposed to be a farming organization or a agricultural organization, so it was already being promoted then. And with the wanting to plant croplands, you know, out in the Flint Hills, there's no way you could do that, and I'd be willing to buy the first bottle of salad dressing for those who want to go out and start eating the grass themselves.
Thank you, Amy. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
This is one of the things, one of the tactics that these environmental groups have used from their inception is we had all of these organizations, several of the callers have mentioned them, farming organizations, farm bureaus, people like that, that were there to help the interest, the true interest of farmers and so forth. And not just in the farming industry, but several other industries, these guys have moved in and taken control of them and changed their leadership, changed their focus, and then they became allies to these destructive processes. And then when you stand up and against it, well, the Farm Bureau says it's they're bad people. Well, now you're a nutcase because you're opposing them. You know, it's they're the ones that change, not you.
I apologize to callers holding. We're down to 30 seconds in the broadcast, and I want to give that to our guest here today. Tom, if you could rehearse, how is it our listeners can get engaged? What can they do?
You've got to get angry and begin to go into groceries and demand that they have country of origin labels on there, and call your congressman, begin to demand that, and oppose the word sustainable anywhere you hear it. It is not good.
Tom DeWeese with us, and then folks, download the report, AmericanPolicy.org, and review these points that we talked about. That's AmericanPolicy.org. It is real, and it's a very real threat to destroying the beef industry here in the United States and even that around the world. Tom, thank you so much for your research and for shouting the alarm here for our listeners today.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Again, Tom DeWeese with us. And folks, the website is AmericanPolicy.org. Copy the article. Send a link. Let others know what you have learned today. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.